Part 3.
To comprehend this, we must remove that artful edifice of the Apollonian culture, stone by stone, until we behold the foundations on which it stands. Here we discern, first of all, the magnificent figures of Olympic gods that stand on the summits of these edifices and whose deeds decorate the friezes in far-reaching illuminated reliefs. If Apollo also stands among them, as one god among many, and without claim to first place, we should not be confused. The same force that is symbolized in Apollo actually gave birth to the entire Olympic realm, and in this sense, we can see Apollo as its father. What was that mighty desire from which such a brilliant society of Olympic beings was born? Those who approach these Olympians with a different religion in their heart, and then, after searching for the proper height and even for sanctity, for non-corporeal spirituality, for compassionate, loving glances, will have to turn away from them disgruntled and disappointed. Here, nothing reminds you of asceticism, spirituality, or duty. Here, only an abundant, even triumphant existence speaks to us, where everything is deified, regardless of whether it is good or evil. Thus, the beholder might be rather disappointed at the sight of this splendid indulgence of life, asking about the kind of magic potion with which these high-spirited people might have enjoyed life, so that wherever they look, Helen, that idol floating in the sweet sensuality of her own existence, turns her smile to them. To this already retreating observer, we must, however, call out, "Do not go away, but listen first to what the Greek folk wisdom has to say about this life that unfolds before you with such unbelievable gaiety." There is an old legend about King Midas, who hunted in the forest for the wise Silenus, the companion of Dionysus, and could not catch him. When he finally has him in his hands, the king asks him, "What is the best of all things for human beings?" Dumbfounded and motionless, the demon remains silent until, forced by the king, he breaks out in loud laughter with the following words, "You miserable one-day species, children of accident and of drudgery, why do you force me to tell you what is dreadful to hear? The very best is entirely unreachable for you, not to be born, not to exist, and not to be anything. However, the second best thing for you is to die soon." How does the Olympian world of the gods respond?